Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents The Unknown by J.W. Lynn, narrated by Nicole Zanzarella.
Tuesday, May 1st, 03:20. Goat. Screams. Screams. Everywhere. Everyone is scared. But I don't know who everyone is. Their voices sound young, so I guess they're kids, like me. I don't hear any older voices. So either the grown-ups aren't scared, or there aren't any grown-ups with us anymore. I wish my dad were here to protect me, but he's not. He's hardly ever around when I need him. My mom isn't here either. The last time I saw her was about an hour ago, when two men who were wearing black masks came into my house and took me from her. The men put me inside the back of a van and drove me away. When the van stopped, they tied a ripped t-shirt over my eyes and moved me into this place that sounds like a helicopter. I don't know why they covered up my eyes. What is it that they don't want me to see? Mom and Dad always tried to teach me to be brave. I know they'd tell me to be brave right now because I am a man. But I'm not a man. I'm only 9 years old, and I don't want to be brave. I want to go home. But I have a terrible feeling that I'm never going home again. Somebody pulls my pajama shirt down over one of my shoulders. It's a grown-up who is doing this. At least the hand feels grown-up-sized. I reach up to stop the hand, but it brushes me away. Something small and cold rubs against the skin on my arm. All of a sudden, it smells like my doctor's office. And then there's a sharp poke into my skin. A needle. And the screams fade away.
Tuesday, May 1st, 06:34. Unpleasant.
Am I in a coffin? No, it's too big to be a coffin. But whatever it is, it's extremely small. Too small. And it feels like it's getting smaller every second. There isn't enough air in here. The walls and ceiling are black. Even the light shining dimly above me seems to be tinged with black. My eyes can't focus. The pillow and sheets are white, like the ones in a hospital. Am I in a hospital? I can't breathe. I need air. There's no sound in here except for my own raspy breaths. I wonder if anyone outside my coffin will hear me if I scream. My head and neck feel strangely cold and bare. Something's missing from my body. I reach up anxiously, and my horrified fingers run panicked over the stubble on my scalp. Someone cut off my hair. It's like a boy's haircut, a really short one. There is less than half an inch left. Why did they cut off my hair? Everything is getting blurry. Am I crying? No, I don't cry.
I wonder if my mom finally made good on her threat to have me committed to a mental institution because she can't control me.
I always thought it was stupid for her to say that. Just because I'm her daughter, that doesn't give her the right to control me. I'm perfectly capable of making my own decisions. If I want to destroy my life, I should be allowed to do it.
But if she was going to have me committed, why now? In less than 2 months, I will be an adult and my mom will be free of her legal obligation to me.
Maybe she thinks this is her last chance. My heart is beating so hard, it's going to give out. Is someone monitoring me? Can't they see I'm freaking out in here? This can't be a hospital. It's moving. The feeling is extremely subtle, but there is definitely some movement. Unless the movement is just an altered perception, a side effect from the drug that was injected into me last night to make me stop fighting.
Is anyone going to help me?
Maybe this whole thing is just one of my bad dreams.
Are they ever going to let me out of here? This must be a dream. It has to be. It's too bizarre to be real. I don't want to die in here. I'm losing my mind. Please, someone, anyone, get me out of here.
Tuesday, May 1st, 0702. Tiger. Last night, I was snatched from my family's house by masked men who didn't speak. I woke up here, inside this little black compartment that's only big enough for a tiny mattress, with my pretty hair all gone. I was alone until one of the compartment's walls slid away and a kid poked their upside-down face into my compartment, maybe from a compartment above mine. The kid leaps down onto a floor that's below my compartment, and I see that she's a girl. She looks about a year or two older than me, maybe 13 or 14 years old. She's wearing white pajama shorts with purple dots all over them and a matching sleeveless top. Like me, her hair is almost non-existent. Unlike me, her breasts have started to grow.
"Were you kidnapped too?"
the girl asks me. I nod, but I don't say anything. I wonder if she knows that I'm a girl. I'm wearing my oldest brother's hand-me-down pajamas. With my hair now gone and my chest still flat, I could easily be mistaken for a boy. I guess it doesn't really matter right now.
"Come on," she says. "We need to find out what's going on here."
I climb out of my compartment, and the two of us search the space around us. It doesn't take long. The floor that we're standing on is only about 2 feet wide and 6 feet long. There are two bed compartments, mine and this girl's, one on top of the other. Walls surround us on all sides, and there is a ladder leading up to the circular spot on the ceiling that looks like a covered manhole. The girl points up at the manhole.
"That must be the way out."
"It's probably locked," I say. "The kidnappers surely don't want us wandering about unsupervised."
"We might as well try it," the girl says.
She makes quick work of the ladder, and soon she's at the top. I watch as she touches a glowing red button on the ceiling. To my surprise, the button turns green, and silently, the manhole lifts open.
"I'm going up," the girl whispers to me. "Are you coming?"
"I'm right behind you," I say to her. Barefoot, I climb up the cold metal rungs of the ladder toward the exit. Tuesday, May 1st, 0713. Goat. There's a girl staring at me. She's standing right outside the box that I slept in. I think she's close to my age, but she might be a little bit younger. Maybe she's 8 years old. She's wearing a blue nightshirt with a black and white drawing of the Eiffel Tower on the front, and she's almost bald. I woke up almost bald, too. I guess the men shaved off my hair after they gave me the medicine that made me go to sleep. "Where are we?" I ask the girl.
"I don't know,"
she says very quietly, as if she's afraid that someone might overhear. "How did you get here?" I ask, making my voice softer this time.
"Men came into my house and stole me from my bed."
She stops talking and just looks at me with sad eyes. "Where are the men now?" I ask her. She shrugs.
"I don't know."
Tuesday, May 1st, 0729. Unpleasant. When my coffin opened, I found myself in a slightly larger chamber that had a hatch on the floor. The hatch led me to a ladder which deposited me in a place about half the size of my bedroom back home. The only way in or out of here seems to be via the hatches, four on the floor and two on the ceiling. On either side of this narrow space, there are four chairs and four small tables, all of them bolted down to the floor.
Everything is pure white, except for a silver sink in one corner with 8 silver cups set above it. 8 rectangular windows reveal that we are in some kind of aircraft, flying high above a body of water. An ocean, maybe? But which ocean? There are 3 other kids in here, 2 girls and 1 boy. All teenagers, but they are younger than me. The boy is probably the oldest of the 3. He's maybe 15 or 16. The girls look like they're 12 or 13. Everyone is wearing what appear to be their night clothes, like I am, and they have ultra-short haircuts that match mine. The older-looking girl has reddened eyes as if she's been crying. I haven't cried in a long time, and I don't plan to start now. Crying doesn't get you anywhere. I should know. I've cried more in my 17 years than normal people do in an entire lifetime, and it has gotten me nowhere at all. Except maybe here. Yesterday was an ordinary day. In the morning, my mom dragged me out of bed 20 minutes before school started and left me lying on the cold tile floor of the bathroom. I forced myself to take a shower, so I didn't smell bad enough or look greasy enough to attract unwanted attention from people. I hate attention from people, especially the people at school. After my shower, I toweled off, got dressed, and ducked out of the house before my mom could give me yet another one of her disappointed stares. I was halfway to the bus stop before I realized that I forgot to brush my teeth. That didn't matter, though. No one sees your teeth if you never smile. School was normal, and by normal, I mean it sucked. I missed pointless homeroom, but I arrived before the bell for first period. The school and I have an understanding that if I arrive in time for actual classes, I won't be disciplined for being tardy. Despite the fact that I've missed every homeroom since the start of 12th grade, they're still planning to let me graduate in June. At least, they were. Who knows what's going to happen now? I'm pretty sure I'm not going to make it to school today. Who knows if I'll ever make it to school again? One more kid arrives, a girl around 13 years old. She looks bewildered, like the others, awkward and uncertain. She takes a seat on one of the chairs, probably because the rest of us are sitting, and she doesn't talk, probably because the rest of us aren't talking. A few seconds later, a boy and a girl emerge together from one of the hatches on the floor. They can't be more than 8 or 9 years old. They're so little. Helpless. Frightened. But that isn't my problem. I need to focus on how to get out of here. Not that I really want to get back home, but I don't want to let anyone take control of my life. End my life. Even though maybe they should. The youngest boy and girl sit together on a chair. They're so small that they share it as though it's a diminutive couch. That brings the total number of kids here to 7, including me. Everyone except for me emerged from one of the hatches on the floor. I'm the only one who entered from a hatch on the ceiling. The other ceiling hatch is still closed tight. It could lead to anywhere. To another bedroom, maybe? Or maybe it leads to our kidnappers. Another minute passes before the remaining hatch on the ceiling finally opens. My body tenses as bare feet appear on the ladder that's below the hatch. The feet are big ones, fully grown, attached to muscular legs with hair growing on them. But I think he might be one of us, because he's wearing only boxers and a t-shirt. And then I see his face. Yes, he's a kid. About my age. Like all the rest of us, his head has been shaved, rendering him nearly bald. "Where the hell are we?" he says loudly. I feel a shock inside me at the noise of his voice, disturbing the silence. "Be quiet," the littlest girl says. Her tone is firm and gentle at the same time. "The bad men might hear you." She's a bold little girl, the kind of little girl I used to be. "I hope they do hear me," he responds. I want them to come in here and tell me what the hell is going on.
I roll my eyes at his bravado. And then what are you going to do? I ask the boy. His gaze locks with mine.
What do you propose?
He asks me, bristling. I look at the faces of the other kids. They're scared. I doubt arguing with this boy will help calm their fears. He and I appear to be the oldest ones here. We need to take control, or at least I do. I inhale and address the group as a whole. I take it that last night, strangers wearing masks took each of you from your homes, and you were given an injection to make you sleep, and you woke up a little while ago in a coffin bed. Is that right? Slowly, everyone nods. So we're all in the same boat. I'm really not sure where to go from here, so I buy myself some time. Why don't we go around in a circle and introduce ourselves? Tell your age, a little about yourself, and what you're good at. That's something we did on the first day of a group therapy session I went to back in sixth grade. I got sent there because the useless school counselor said I had to attend at least one therapy session after I got beat up in the gym locker room. I went once, but I never went back because I was sure that it wouldn't help me. Even at that age, I already knew that nothing could help me. And then I have a thought. Maybe we shouldn't use our real names, in case the kidnappers don't already know them. I say, you can pick another name for us to call you, whatever name you want. The difficult boy slumps down into one of the two remaining empty seats. I guess he's done confronting me, for the moment.
You go first.
The littlest girl says to me. Maybe she should be the one in charge. Okay, I exhale. I'm 17 years old, I say. I'm good at swimming, which is pretty useless in our current situation. That's about it. Next.
And what should we call you?
The little girl asks. I haven't really considered what name I'd like to use here. I figured I'd go last, not first, so I'd have time to think. I despise my real name. This is my chance to pick a name that fits me, an honest name. We need to be honest with each other. You might as well call me what my mom calls me, I say. Unpleasant, because I'm generally unpleasant. If I had said such a thing at school, everyone would have laughed at me. But no one here laughs. Not even the smallest of snickers, not even from Difficult Boy. They all just turn to the kid to my left, the youngest boy, and focus their attention on him. Tuesday, May 1st, 0736. Goat. I'm 9 years old, I say. I'm good at tying knots, and I'm okay at sailing, although I haven't been sailing in a while. You can call me Goat. I feel my cheeks get hot. The name, Goat, sounded good in my head, but out loud it sounds strange. I try to explain. It's because goats are good friends, and they make milk that can be turned into cheese. Anyway, goats are useful. I hope I can be useful someday. That sounded completely stupid. I wish I could delete everything I said and start over. I stare down at the Han Solo picture on my pajamas, trying to stop tears from burning their way into my eyes. The girl who is sharing my chair with me gently nudges my elbow. I look over at her, and she smiles in a way that makes me believe that she doesn't think I sounded stupid at all. It actually looks like she thinks the exact opposite.
My name is Paris, she says, looking only at me. That's because it's my favorite place in the world, even though I've never been there. I'm 9 years old. I'm good at spelling and math. Pretty much anything at school, except for sports. I'm not good at sports.
Neither am I, so we have something in common.
Paris smiles at me again. I feel like she can hear my thoughts just by looking at my face.
Next, Paris adds, and we move on to the person sitting next to us. Tuesday, May 1st, 0740. Tiger. It's almost my turn to introduce myself. There's only one person left before me. My heart is beating harder and harder every second. I don't want my turn to come. I hate speaking in front of people. I don't like people staring at me. I like to blend into walls. Usually I'm pretty good at that, but blending into walls is impossible here. There's one person who is making me especially nervous about my turn. My brother. He's sitting in a chair just a few feet away from me. He must have noticed me here, but we haven't made eye contact because we don't do that. Even though my brother and I have shared the same home ever since I was born, it's as if we don't share anything at all. He generally doesn't acknowledge my existence, just like now. It's my turn. You can call me Tiger, I say, staring at my feet. I'm 12 years old, and I'm a girl. I'm good at nothing much, really. I exhale, feeling frustrated with myself. That isn't what I rehearsed in my head. I was going to tell everyone why I chose the name Tiger. It's the name of the dog that my family adopted from the animal shelter on my 10th birthday. My parents said that Tiger was my dog. They said they got him for me because they felt I was mature enough to take on the responsibility of caring for a pet. But that night, when my dad was talking with my mom in their bedroom, I overheard him say the true reason that they adopted Tiger. They thought a dog would help bring me out of my shell. Apparently, someone told them that dogs were good for kids who have mild autism, like me. I wasn't going to tell everyone here that I have autism. I was just going to tell them the part about naming myself Tiger because of my dog. I end up stopping where I did, with the statement that I'm not good at anything, and I nod at the girl who is sitting in the chair next to me, hoping that she will take over the spotlight. Mercifully, she does. Tuesday, May 1st, 0742. Unpleasant. As I listen to the other kids introduce themselves, I start to feel like maybe my introduction wasn't as awful as it felt. It was truthful. Just like the other kids' introductions seem to be. If we were doing this in regular life, people would be saying things that they thought made them sound cool or funny or popular. But here, people are talking the way they would to close friends. The kind of friends who you can discuss your true feelings with, even the ones that make you sound weird. But we aren't friends. We barely know each other. I guess if we stay here long enough, we will become friends or enemies. It's impossible to spend all of your time with someone without becoming one or the other. As each kid introduces themselves, I try to remember what they say, but I can't seem to retain anything at all. My brain is painfully foggy. That's unfortunate because I need to be more alert than ever right now. Who knows what threat we are about to face? Clearly, our kidnappers are carefully controlling things here. They opened the doors to our bedrooms and allowed us to gather. If we do anything that isn't to their liking, they will no doubt intervene. I saw last night how they intervene, with gags and restraints and injections of powerful tranquilizers. I don't think it's wise to misbehave at this point. Eventually, I may need to take actions that could elicit punishment, but I won't do so until I believe that the risks are outweighed by the potential benefits. For now, we are being allowed to sit and introduce ourselves without interruption. Maybe our captors are listening in, trying to collect information about us. Maybe they don't know much about the kids they've kidnapped, and they want to get some insight. Figure out our strengths and weaknesses. It isn't until Difficult Boy speaks that I realize how far my thoughts have wandered. I'm Liam, he says,
That's my real name. I'm 17. I can take apart just about anything and put it back together. When I turn 18, I'm going into the military.
After he says that, difficult boy, I mean, Liam, looks at me.
Okay, we've all introduced ourselves. Now what?
It's clear by his tone that he's mocking me rather than considering me to be the one who's in charge. The truth is, I have no idea what we should do now. Maybe we should just sit here and wait.
But wait for what?
Something must be coming, something nefarious. There would be no sense in kidnapping us and locking us up and leaving us until we die. The captors must have plans for us.
Suddenly, a bell dings. 2 times. A signal. An instant later, a long, skinny portion of one of the walls slides up and 8 transparent boxes are revealed. I can see what's inside. Food. I am so hungry. Everyone just stares at the boxes. Everyone except for Liam.
Breakfast is served, he says, and he walks over to the boxes as if there is nothing sinister to be considered.
What if it's poisoned?
The littlest girl, Paris, says.
If they wanted to kill us, they would have done it last night, Liam replies.
There could be some kind of tranquilizer in the food, I say.
Why tranquilize us if we're being cooperative?
He counters.
If you want to eat it, go ahead, I respond. I'll wait and see what happens to you first.
Paris nods. Me too.
The other kids nod as well.
Suit yourselves.
Liam selects one of the boxes and returns to his seat before opening it up. As soon as he does, the aroma of warm maple syrup wafts over to me, moistening my dry mouth. I watch as he pours fruit and nuts into some sort of hot cereal and then spoons the resulting concoction into his mouth.
Mmm, so good, he says, either truly relishing the food or mocking me again.
Or maybe a little of both. Liam's food is gone in minutes. He returns the empty container to its original location and obtains a cup of clear liquid from the nearby sink. He downs the liquid in seconds.
This boy has no fear, and maybe no common sense either.
Anyone who wants to forego their breakfast, let me know, Liam says. I'll gladly eat it for you.
The other kids squirm as their resolve starts to weaken. Liam seems fine after eating and drinking what has been provided to us. After a few minutes, the others begin to collect their boxes of food and hesitantly eat. I am no longer the leader. Liam is. After about 10 minutes, only one kid remains unfed other than me. Paris. She stares, with a mixture of longing and worry, at Goat's food as he finishes it up.
It's probably safe to go ahead and eat, I tell Paris. I'll wait a little longer, she says, giving me an uncertain smile. I nod.
Suit yourself. As everyone else finishes their meals and returns their empty food boxes to the wall, surprisingly normal-sounding conversations begin. People are starting to let down their guard. I won't let down my guard here. Not now. Not ever. Suddenly, the bell sounds again. 1, 2, 3 times. And then, the wall slides closed with all of the food boxes, 2 of them completely untouched, behind it. My heart plummets into my aching, empty stomach.
Looks like breakfast is over,
Liam says in his mocking tone, looking directly at me. Under different circumstances, I would punch him in the ribs. Liam needs to be put in his place before his behavior escalates. But punching Liam will almost certainly get me punished by whoever brought us here. I highly doubt they want us beating each other up.
I'm sorry about breakfast, Paris, I say loudly enough to make sure Liam hears me. I hope he feels ashamed of himself. By mocking me, he was also mocking that 9-year-old girl.
But maybe Liam doesn't feel bad about stuff like that.
I'm okay,
Para says quietly. She isn't okay. She's hungry.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?